from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Lily Jamali. Friends and family remembered Oscar Grant on New Year's Day, 10 years to the day since the 22-year-old was shot and killed by a BART police officer at Oakland's Fruitvale Station. KQED's Sandhya Dirks attended a memorial in his honor.
Why should my heart feel lonely?
I was up at 2 this morning.
Oscar Grant's mother, Wanda Johnson.
Just thinking about what happened to my son and just kind of crying about it. Oscar always told his sister and myself that he wanted to be a star, that he wanted to be famous. And whether he knows it or not, he is famous right now, you know.
Grant's daughter, Tatiana, was 4 years old when her father died. She thanked Oscar's friends who were with him when he was killed.
I want to thank all you guys for being here in my life. Like, y'all really made up for missing my dad.
It wasn't just a vigil to honor Grant's life, but also to celebrate the movement his death inspired. A decade ago, there was far less visibility around police violence. Grant's death galvanized a new generation of activists. The BART officer who shot Grant in the back while he lay on his stomach was eventually found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. He says he mistook his gun for his taser. Wanda Johnson wants BART to rename Fruitvale Station after her son.
I'm claiming that the BART station will be changed to Grant Fruitvale Station. We're claiming that. We believe that.
A mural celebrating Oscar Grant, backed by BART, will go up at the station this year. For the California Report, I'm Sandhya Dirks.
The last week has brought several new developments regarding PG&E and its role in our state's recent wildfires. KQED's Dan Brecky is with me now. He's been following every development closely. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Dan, so much has happened this past week. We had some key filings come out over the holiday stemming from PG&E's felony probation in the deadly San Bruno pipeline explosion in 2010. And the judge overseeing that probation asked Attorney General Javier Becerra to weigh in by December 31st. And what he was basically asking is, did the utility commit a state-level crime?
So the federal judge in this case, Judge William Alsop, wanted to know if PG&E was acting recklessly in starting any of the fires in 2017 and 2018, including the campfire in Butte County. What were the legal consequences? And the Attorney General's answer was, anything from a misdemeanor charge for failing to maintain vegetation properly all the way up to murder.
Now, the judge also asked PG&E to weigh in on what role, if any, it played in the campfire. What did we learn from that?
The PG&E filing contains some new details about what happened the morning the fire started. For instance, the role one of its supervisors played in spotting the fire when it was just a little quarter-acre fire underneath a transmission line up there. But the filing also includes some more detailed inspection history of that line, including the fact that the last detailed inspection that that transmission tower got was in 2014, 5 years ago.
And finally, before we let you go, the CPUC, the state's top regulator overseeing PG&E, coming out with some stunning proposals before the Christmas holiday on what the future of this company might look like.
Yeah, the CPUC has been looking at the company's safety culture for several years, and in the midst of a lot of public clamor for big changes at PG&E after the campfire, they say that they want to consider a wide range of possibilities. And those range from just basically kicking out the board of directors and appointing a new safety-conscious board of directors to changing senior management to maybe switching the company over to a public utility instead of a privately owned one.
None of which are easy tasks, to be sure. KQED's Dan Brecky, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We're going to switch gears now. If you are wondering how the federal government shutdown affects us here in California, look no further than our national parks. At our state's most popular one, Yosemite, things are getting out of hand. KQED's Jeremy Siegel explains.
People are illegally taking their cars off road. Trash isn't getting cleaned up. And with restrooms closed or very limited, some visitors are relieving themselves on the side of the road. To keep up with some of the chaos, park administrators have closed off the popular Mariposa Grove of giant sequoias and the Wawona and Hogden Meadow campgrounds. A spokesman for the National Park Service says the closures will remain in effect until the shutdown is over. For the California Report, I'm Jeremy Siegel.
We are on the verge of seeing a record number of women sworn in as elected officials. That's true on the national and state scenes, and down to the local level. From KQED's Politics and Government Desk, Katie Orr reports.
Women now make up just over 35% of all city council seats and mayorships in California. That's according to public affairs research firm Grassroots Lab. Firm principal Rob Kerenke says that's the highest percentage since they began tracking municipal offices 10 years ago.
Women are doing very well almost everywhere. They're overperforming their numbers in most corners of the state. One thing that really stood out to us was the Bay Area. In that nine-county Bay Area, women were winning almost half the seats.
Non-incumbent women did especially well. Of the more than 500 newly elected officials, 42% were women. And there's a clear partisan divide. Fewer than one in five of those women were Republicans. In fact, Kerenke says the so-called blue wave has wiped out the GOP grip on local politics.
Republicans used to hold a big advantage in local elected offices kind of across the board. That's no longer the case. The selection cycle has really kind of cemented that.
And Kerenke says women are the foundation of the Democratic Party's strength at all levels of government. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
Let's go to San Diego now, where an oceanographer made a big discovery by looking where she was told she would find nothing. Well, she found two species of fish that are thriving despite living in ocean waters almost devoid of oxygen. KPBS reporter Eric Anderson has details.
Scripps Institution of Oceanography researcher Natalia Gallo was told she wouldn't find any fish in the low oxygen parts of the Gulf of California. The ocean bottom there is about 1,000 meters deep and has less than 1% oxygen content. Using a submersible, she found two kinds of fish, a cat shark and a cusk eel, thriving there. Gallo says there is so little oxygen in the deep waters that the ocean there probably shouldn't support life.
Some of these species that have evolved over millions of years of time to live under these conditions that are really metabolically challenging for other animals, they may actually be animals that can increase their habitat in the future under climate change.
Gallo says low oxygen zones may expand as the climate warms, and that could help increase the range of these two fish. However, she also noted the warmer oceans could lead to spots with even less oxygen, where even those fish couldn't survive. For the California Report, I'm Eric Anderson in San Diego.
As we said goodbye to 2018, we also finished out one of the worst fire seasons in years. Wildfires burned more than 1.6 million acres in California. While firefighters have to be ready, their partners have to shoulder a big burden, too. KQED's Sonia Hudson spent some time with a group of Marin County women married to firefighters. She headed to one of their homes to get a crash course in how they push through.
Hi, everyone. Very nice to meet you.
It was that classic moment in a 4th of July parade when the local fire engine rolled down the street and 19-year-old Katie Langless just had to jump on board.
We hopped in the back and just kind of like said hey, and I was like, oh, he's cute, oh, whatever.
That cute guy was Mike Langless. He was working for Marin County Fire. Apparently he thought Katie was cute too, or whatever. They started dating, and Katie says at the time she was really into it when Mike got called out to wildfires around the state.
And I remember him like walking down my parents' driveway, and I was like, oh, my boyfriend's going out of county. Like, I'm so cool. Like, and now 12 years later, a baby, one on the way, and this is only our second fire season with a baby, and I'm like, oh, my God.
12 years later, with her husband away for weeks at a time, Katie's feeding her daughter, fixing things that break around the house, and working part-time. That's hard, but she's found a group of women who get it.
Thank you. We are really nice people.
They support each other through the day-to-day and with larger emotional issues. One of the big ones is a constant undercurrent of fear, says Simone Wallace. Fear that your partner could die from any number of hazards out in the field.
You worry and then you put it over here. And then you just go on with life.
This summer, three Marin firefighters were burned battling the car fire near Redding. Simone's husband was there. He wasn't hurt, but just the mention of this brings the group to tears. Simone shakes her head. She can't speak. Michaela Mercero is sitting next to her and pulls her in for a hug. Molly Lunabis jumps in.
Having a burnover of any sort is just like, it's like the worst nightmare.
Just the word burnover. When Mike said some of the guys got burned over.
Their support network mobilized, says Katie.
I just went into like mom mode of like who needs what? Tell me.
Going into action mode like that in a way comes easy. Sometimes what's harder to deal with is the emotional issues when their partners come home. They bring back extreme fatigue and trauma from what they've seen in the field. Often on their first day home, these women say their husbands will lie on the couch all day just to recover. Then they're left running the household for one more day, adjusting one more time to make a marriage under stress work. For the California Report, I'm Sonia Hudson.
Support for the California Report comes from Collective Health. American employers are in the healthcare business. It's time they had the technology to drive it. CollectiveHealth.com. Paint Care. Through Paint Care, paint manufacturers make it easier for households and businesses to recycle leftover house paint with over 800 convenient drop-off locations around California. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
And that's the California Report for this Wednesday, January 2nd, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great day.